Our culture's blind behavior and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, the fate of the world and what we can do before it's too late. Now with new updated information, available in bookstores every...
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom
Hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, the fate of the world and what we can do before it's too late. Now with new updated information, available in bookstores every
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Both past and present. The suit seeks an end to the discrimination and punitive damages. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Although various state legislatures have complained loudly about state contractors sending jobs overseas, 42 of the 50 states do business with companies that offshore. A new report from Good Jobs First and IT industry organizer Wash Tech says 6 of the 42 are in the process of changing their laws to keep their business domestic. Most contracts that use overseas workers involve call centers based in India and Mexico that provide customer service to people enrolled in state welfare programs.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job. And you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
Very soon now, you'll be hearing and reading red, white, and blue editorials about your responsibility to go vote this fall. Every vote counts, they'll cry. Unless, of course, it doesn't. Many of our votes this year will be cast and tallied on corporate-controlled electronic voting machines that keep no trackable record of our ballots. These computers can easily malfunction and be manipulated, meaning they can be used to cheat and steal elections. Here's a question. Shouldn't your vote for president or Congress or whatever be at least as secure as a 25-cent bet you might place in a Las Vegas slot machine? Of course. Yet a New York Times investigation finds that gamblers are more protected than voters. For example, the software to all gambling machines is on file with the state, and the machines are constantly spot-checked by public officials. But corporate purveyors of electronic voting machines consider their software a trade secret, off-limits to public inspection. Also, if a company wants to sell a gambling device, it must submit to a criminal background check and register its employees. To sell computerized voting devices, however, a corporation only has to convince a local election official to buy its stuff. No checks required. Then there's the conflict of interest issue. The technical labs that certify gambling devices must be independent of the makers of those machines. For voting machines, however, the certifying labs are chosen and paid for by the manufacturers. And what if you think you've been cheated? With a slot machine, you have a right to an immediate inspection, and investigators are on call at all hours, empowered to open the machines and find the flaw or fraud. But with electronic voting machines, there are no inspectors on call, and any subsequent inspection is not allowed to open the machines. This is Jim Hightower saying, why should gamblers be more protected than voters? To fight this scam, go to www.verifiedvoting.org. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George V.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
Tune in tonight to Hangouts, where you'll meet a pop star with a pool for a living room.
Sorry to interrupt, but why check out other people's dream homes when you can use a home equity loan to create your own? Now at LendingTree.com, you can find home equity rates as low as 3.75% APR. But they won't stay that way forever. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. Or visit LendingTree.com. When banks compete, you win. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and license.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, you know, it's the president's leadership, Tom Ridge told us, that has, in the war against terror, not against terrorists, not against Islamic religious fundamentalist zealots, because, you know, criticizing conservative religious zealots may not go over all that well with Bush's base. Well, it might, I suppose, if you made them Islamic, us versus them. But in any case, because of the president's leadership on the war against terror, says Tom Ridge, we have now locked down New York City, Washington, D.C., and bits of New Jersey. We will be talking 1:35 this afternoon with our Washington correspondent, Victoria Jones, about exactly what's going on in Washington, strange happenings. And as well as some very interesting facts and developments on the theft of the vote 2004. What's going on with voting machines? And did you know that in states where gambling is legal, Nevada the most well-known, but there are other parts of the country where gambling is legal, all the states that allow slot machines have provisions in their law that require that if a gambler believes that the slot machine is ripping them off or is rigged, they can call and demand an audit of that slot machine, that an inspector comes out and checks it out and verifies that it's actually working properly immediately. Or within a reasonable period of time, you know, half a day, whatever. It varies from state to state. There is not only no provision for that with regard to electronic voting machines, but in fact, many states have passed laws that make it illegal to inspect a voting machine. Anyhow, we'll get into that more in our second. You know, why should gamblers have more rights than voters in the United States? Well, you know, it's the Republican position, and you got to respect that, I suppose. He says sarcastically. But anyhow, as I started, by the way, greetings. Tom Hartman here with you. We're broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org and cable radio network, and archives at White Rose Society. The great clampdown, this great lockdown that's going on, the terror alert. Don't pay attention to what's going on with the Democrats. Don't pay attention to what's going on in the rest of the country. Just pay attention to be afraid, be very afraid. Now, this is the big story. And it turns out, as the Washington Post reports this morning, as the New York Times reports this morning, the information the terrorists were casing Wall Street and the Citibank building, that information was compiled by the Al-Qaeda folks 4 years ago, before 9/11. Before 9/11. You get this? 4 years, 3 and 4 years old. Most of the Al-Qaeda surveillance, this is the Washington Post story, pre-9/11 acts led to alerts. Most of the Al-Qaeda surveillance of five financial institutions that led to a new terrorism alert Sunday was conducted before the September 11, 2001 attacks. And authorities are not sure whether the casing of the buildings has continued, numerous intelligence and law enforcement officials said yesterday. Most, if not all, of the information, write Dan Egan and Dana Priest in today's Washington Post, most, if not all, of the information about the buildings seized by authorities in a raid in Pakistan last week was about 3 years old and possibly older. One senior law enforcement official who was briefed on the alert told the reporters from the Washington Post, and I quote, "There is nothing right now that we're hearing that is new. Why did we go to this level? I still don't know that." End quote. Well, could it have to do with George Bush not doing so well in the polls? Could it have to do with another day out of the 91 to go before the possibility of regime change, another day that they were able to bump Kerry off the headlines? Believe me, Karl Rove has a plan for every single day between now and November 2nd. Every single day. When Tom Ridge said on Sunday when he announced this thing that they were locking down Washington and New York, that they were going to make all, you know, blah de blah, and this is because of the president's leadership on the war on terror, I suppose you could say he was literally speaking the truth. This came from the political, and Howard, from the political office of the White House. And Howard Dean had the temerity to say so. How dare he? Somehow Howard Dean, and I'm not saying this just because he was the governor of my state for years, because frankly, I always thought of him, you know, here I am broadcasting from the middle of the Green Mountains, you know, we're in the mountains. I'm looking at them right now, right out the window here, in the People's Republic of Vermont. And I always thought of Howard Dean, when he was our governor, as essentially a Rockefeller Republican, what today would be called a moderate Democrat. And he's a Vermont is the only state in the United States that does not, by constitution or by law, require that the governor provide a balanced budget. Vermont's the only state in the union that can have an unbalanced budget. The reason why is because the Constitution that we're operating under as the state of Vermont was actually first written for a nation, because Vermont and Texas are the only two states that were actually nations before they joined the United States of America. And so this is the only state where you can actually run a deficit on your budget, and it's just fine. And it has happened many times in the history of Vermont. Vermont has, you know, kind of a... Vermont declared war on Germany 6 months before the United States did. I kid you not, it's true. Slavery was illegal in Vermont before the United States was even the United States. But anyhow, the point of all that is that, you know, Howard Dean had the ability to have deficits in this state, and yet he was just absolutely, it was like obsessive compulsive disorder. I mean, the budget had to be balanced, and at the same time, he wanted to make sure every child in this state had health care. And he did. He did both. So, anyhow, here's this guy who I'd always thought of as a moderate, and he seems to always be out in front of the curve. When Osama was caught, Osama was caught. By the way, you know, we'll get to this as time goes on here in the program, but reports out of Syria indicate that al-Zarqawi, the number two or number three guy, depending on how you define it, probably the number two guy in al-Qaeda, was captured over the weekend on the Syrian-Iraqi border. So what do you want to bet that in about 25 days, as the Republican convention is cranking up and the coronation of the third George to be head of the United States, is rolling along. What do you want to bet they pull El-Zekari out of the hat? If not Osama. And they will discover some weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. I'm not a betting man, but if I was, I would put money on those two things. Zekari and weapons of mass destruction in Iraq will be found before the end of the Republican National Convention. So anyhow, here we have this administration official stressed yesterday that even three-year-old intelligence, when coupled with other information about al-Qaeda's plans to attack the United States, justified the massive security response in the three cities. See, they caught this guy. They leaned on ISI, the Pakistani CIA, the Pakistani Intelligence Service. They leaned on them hard. And they said, you've got to deliver an HVT in time for the Democratic National Convention so we can bump John Kerry off the headlines. An HVT, a high-value target. You got to get us one of the top guys. And sure enough, the Pakistan and Colin Powell went over there and he said, you do this for us and we will ignore the fact that you have so, that in the last two or three years since Musharraf, the dictator of Pakistan, overthrew a democratically elected government and installed himself as dictator, rewrote the Constitution to give himself all this power, put off the elections. This is a guy, he's got to be close to George W.'s heart. I mean, this is the model. And his head of nuclear state secret stuff was selling how to make a bomb information to Iran, to North Korea, to Syria, to Libya, to anybody who wanted it. This guy was running a supermarket. Everybody except Iraq, of course. Saddam wasn't buying this stuff. So sure enough, ISI comes out with a guy that had a $25 million price tag on his head the Sunday before the convention, and they hold the story until 6 hours before John Kerry gives his speech. Yeah, right on with the Karl Rove plan. So here comes this information. When they caught the guy, apparently he had a laptop computer with him. And on this laptop computer was information from people having cased the Bank of America building in San Francisco, the NASDAQ and American Stock Exchange buildings in New York, and an undisclosed building in Washington and another undisclosed building in New Jersey. 4 years ago, when they were still planning 9/11, apparently. Well, why are we acting on the information now? Well, because we just found it now. But it's 4 years old. Well, that shouldn't get in the way of a good terror alert. I mean, it's great for the headlines. Here, Howard Dean says, when Saddam Hussein was caught, Howard Dean said, it's not going to make America safer. And everybody said, he's crazy. Ignore that man. Turns out he was right. And now he says, I'm suspicious. I'm paraphrasing. I'm suspicious of the timing of the release of this information and of this so-called terror alert. Smells like politics to me. Even John Kerry was afraid to say, yeah, maybe Howard's right. Everybody's saying, that's Howard Dean. He's a little strange. I'll put my money on Howard any day. The guy's solid. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. You're in the real free speech zone. Stick around.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer. the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the Project for the New American Century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Say what you want. Mean what you say. Remember the deepest seeds till find the light of day.
So George Bush comes out and he says, this terror alert shows, to quote Bush, there's an enemy which hates what we stand for. Well, first of all, it should be in there's an enemy who hates. When you're referring to human beings, you use who instead of that. In fact, actually, he should have said, if he was going to use, here's the English major in me, should have been that hates what we stand for rather than which. But in any case, there's an enemy which hates what we stand for. No, they don't, George. Osama's not sitting around a cave going, those guys get to watch Fear Factor on TV. That's not any. Yeah, we got to. No, no. Come on.
Or those guys get to vote for who's president.
No. They hate our foreign policy. Very simple. Very straightforward. They have said it over and over again. If we were to eliminate the SUV exemption to fleet standards, mileage standards for cars in the United States, and then raise the mileage standard by 3 miles per gallon, we would no longer need any oil whatsoever from the Middle East. Just that simple step. It's too much, though, for George Bush to even think about. No, better to lose 1,000 American lives, nearly. It'll get there, unfortunately. You know, God forbid. I mean, it's a crime and a shame, but it's and a tragedy. By the way, our website, TomHartmann.com, however you spell it, it'll get you there. It's actually T-H-O-M and Hartman with two N's, but Tom Hartman, T-O-M, however you spell it, it'll get you there. You can get to our chat room, which is already full of some of the finest minds on the Internet. Interesting, intellectual, thoughtful. Occasionally, you get some pretty good discussions of sex going on in there, too. No, well, you can find out whether I'm kidding or not. Anyway, it's our chat room there and our message board, where you'll find tens of thousands of messages on various and diverse subjects, most having to do with politics. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Jared in Pennsylvania, in fact, is on the line. Hey, Jared, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I am
thanks
great.
For everything you do.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to bring up Sybil Edmonds' open letter to the 9/11 Commission.
Yes.
I think it really pertains to what you're talking about, how they specifically were making a backlog of information to do what they are seeming to do right now in New York.
Yeah. It's Sybil Edmonds is one of the great, whistleblowers in America. I mean, she was on this program a week ago Friday, and now she's been vindicated. And one of the things that it's showing is how there are some parallels, not huge ones, but some parallels between the 9/11 Commission and the Warren Commission. You know, we really don't want to know about that. I interviewed Dave Powers. Dave Powers was the head of the Kennedy Library for years and years. He was a good friend of Jack Kennedy's. He was like his right-hand man in the White House. And he and Kenny McDonald were in the car right behind Kennedy as they were driving through Dealey Plaza in November of 1963. And I interviewed him in his office in the Kennedy Library. In fact, I was sitting in Jack's old rocking chair, which was a hoot. And I said to Dave, he had never given an interview on the record before. And I said, what did you see? And he said, we were sitting in the car, and he says, I saw a muzzle blast right in front of us, in front of the car, in front of Jack, from that grassy knoll, and then I saw the back of Jack's head blown off. And he said, Kenny grabbed me, and we heard fire from behind us, too, and we jumped out. And I said, did you try and tell the Warren Commission? He said, yeah, and every time I'd get into a sentence about it, Jerry Ford would interrupt me. And they never let him tell his story. And you go back and you read his testimony in the Warren Commission, and it's true. That's they wouldn't let him tell his story. And I think with the 9/11 Commission, we're seeing the same thing. We'll have a little bit of truth, but too much truth, that might be uncomfortable for the administration, you know. So, Jared, thanks for bringing that up.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. I'm going to get along on this interesting news out of Kuwait. And actually, a lot of interesting news today. We'll get to it as time goes on. Stick around. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Workers at a sugar plant in Minnesota have found themselves locked out with no contact from the company. More than 220 employees of the Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Cooperation in Renville arrived at work last Thursday and found that they could not enter the plant. Many of the 500 farmers that are members of the cooperation also did not find out about the lockout until the workers did.
This week, car giant Ford Motor Company is launching on August 5th its first American-made hybrid SUV called the Ford Escape. Produced by union workers in a Kansas City plant, Escape is being celebrated as a breakthrough in reducing U.S. oil dependence. The UAW, Sierra Club, Apollo Alliance, United Steelworkers, and the Audubon Society are encouraging other auto manufacturers to produce hybrid vehicles. They're kicking off the Green Machines Tour, promoting hybrids and fuel efficiency in an effort to convince state and federal governments to fund new environmentally friendly technologies. Judy Ansell is the director of the Institute for Labor Studies at UMKC.
Well, a hybrid uses much less gas. The new hybrid Escape will achieve 30 to 36 miles per gallon, or more than a 50% improvement over the standard Escape. In terms of cleaner air, in terms of less dependence on foreign imported oil, this is a good thing for the United States and for American consumers.
Demand for the hybrid Escape is expected to be high. There are waiting lists in the U.S. to purchase foreign-produced hybrids like the Toyota Prius or Honda Civic, and U.S. registration of hybrid vehicles jumped 26% last year.
A lawsuit has been filed against photographic giant Kodak alleging racial discrimination. The suit says the company has been paying black employees less than white employees for more than a decade. In addition, it claims that African Americans were promoted less and that the company allowed Caucasian employees to harass them. The suit also alleges that Kodak would retaliate against employees who complained. The class action lawsuit was filed on behalf of 10 black employees, but covers at least 1,000 both past and present. The suit seeks an end to the discrimination and punitive damages. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Although various state legislatures have complained loudly about state contractors sending jobs overseas, 42 of the 50 states do business with companies that offshore. A new report from Good Jobs First and IT industry organizer Wash Tech says 6 of the 42 are in the process of changing their laws to keep their business domestic. Most contracts that use overseas workers involve call centers based in India and Mexico that provide customer service to people enrolled in state welfare programs.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, here's the truth from Kuwait. Isn't this interesting? This is the newspaper. You know, the main newspaper in Kuwait, Al Bawaba. Albawaba.com, if you want to check it out. Kuwaiti newspaper, Zarqawi captured on Syrian-Iraq border. Reports in Kuwait last Friday said a man assumed to be al-Qaeda leader in Iraq, Abu Musab Zarqawi, has been captured near the Syrian border. Zarqawi, whose Tawhid and Jihad group has claimed responsibility for numerous attacks in Iraq, was captured during a joint operation by U.S. forces and Iraqi police. Al-Saisa newspaper, quoting informed Iraqi sources, said Friday. The U.S. and Iraqi investigators are confirming his identity with DNA tests. Zarqawi is the most wanted suspect in Iraq and has a U.S. $25 million bounty on his head. And just like this terrorist who got trotted out 6 hours before John Kerry was scheduled to give his speech, I'd say you can safely bet that if Zarqawi has been captured, and according to the Arab press, he has, he will be trotted out in all probability, along with some, a few weapons of mass destruction that they'll find right around the time of the Republican National Convention. Maybe just before it. actually, to kind of sensitize Americans and so that they'll all have something to brag about. They probably won't want to do it during the convention because it might draw away from the talking heads talking about George Bush's speech, but he's going to need it as a setup. So sometime in the next few weeks, Karl Rove's got a good schedule here. He's gonna do everything he can to make sure his man wins. And you have the power to make a difference in the United States. This is the absolute lesson, not just of American democracy, but of this election year. The absolute lesson has got to be, and is, I mean, as it has been so many times in the past, in American history, through the years, the lesson being that it's we the people who make the difference, because uniquely our government was created after 6,000 years of kings and popes and feudal lords. Uniquely our government was created, we the people, as the people holding the power. Now, of course, we need to vigilantly watch that power is not usurped. Vigilantly. And, as I said, I'm going to get into that a little more in the second hour. But here, former Air Force Chief of Staff, this from CNN, and one-time veteran for Bush. See, the tide is turning here. It's interesting. I am convinced that one of the reasons why we're not seeing these things in the polls is because the polls are, so many of these polls are based on, you know, likely voters, past voters, people who voted in the past, and there's just this avalanche of people now who are registering to vote and who are going to participate in this year's election. I predict this election is going to see the highest voter turnout in the history of the United States. The last one was almost there. More people voted for Al Gore in 2000 than have ever voted for any candidate for president of the United States in the history of this republic. And I predict that this year, more people will vote for John Kerry than even voted for Al Gore. So it's just, you know, the way the polls are configured, it's not showing up. But they're out there. We're out there. You are out there. And the Rockefeller Republicans, as it were, the true old I want to say true Republicans, but you know the Republican Party has been hijacked, and you know it's just a word. The Republicans who believe in a republic rather than a corporatocracy, which is clearly the belief of the Bush administration, all hail the corporations. They're the ones with control. They're the ones with the power. Clean air, clean sky, clear skies. We don't need no stinking clear skies if it's going to diminish the profits of one of the most profitable industries in America that can make such large contributions to the Republican Party. No Child Left Behind. Well, you know, it's if it makes money for the testing corporations that contribute money to the Republican Party, it's a good thing to demand that the states have these tests. However, if it's going to increase the salaries of teachers who are members of unions, we're not going to fund that part of it. We're going to withhold the funding for that part of it. You get it? I mean, it's so really tragic. And it's time for us to take this country back. And included in us are patriots of all stripes. People who love this nation and believe in the ideals on which it was founded. People who get it. And which leads me back to the story I just started reading to you a minute ago. Former Air Force Chief of Staff and one-time veteran for Bush. Yes, there is a group called Veterans for Bush. They're hiding someplace right now. Said Saturday that America's foreign relations for the first 3 years of President Bush's term have been, quote, a national disaster, end quote. And that the president's Democratic rival, that would be John Kerry, is up to the task of rebuilding. Retired General Tony McPeak, the Air Force Chief of Staff during the first Gulf War, delivered the Democratic radio address, this was a week or so ago, supporting the implementation of the 9/11 Commission's recommendations for national security. I'm sharing with you, by the way, a story from CNN.com, CNN.allpolitics.com. And McPeak said of Kerry, as president, John Kerry will not waste a minute in bringing action on the reforms urged by the 9/11 Commission, and he will not rest until America's defenses are strong. Now, I'm still digging on this thing, because what George Bush says he's going to do with the 9/11 Commission recommendations is not yet clear. A couple of things are clear. Number one, he's not going to adopt all of them. But what he's going to do and how he's going to do it is not yet clear. And my guess is that he's going to do whatever he does in a way that will enhance his power in the belief that he's going to hold the White House forever. This is this bizarre attention deficit disorder that you see in this White House, and oddly in the Republican Party. And it comes from the good old-fashioned word hubris, right? The belief that whatever you do, it's going to work out. You've got it sewn up. Don't worry. Be happy. And so the Republicans, for example, in Nebraska, passing a law making it illegal to audit an electronic voting machine. Now, why would they do that? Well, because they think they're going to be in power forever. But they won't be. Things go in cycles. Things go in cycles in America. And the cycle is swinging back. I remember back in, 70-something, 72, 74, when Kevin Phillips wrote The Emerging Republican Majority. He wrote that book predicting, essentially, that the Republicans were going to take over. And sure enough, 6-8 years later, it happened. There's a book that came out a year or two ago called The Emerging Democratic Majority. I forget the author. I've got it around here someplace. I read about 3/4 of it. And, you know, the demographics are changing. The pendulum is swinging back. We go through cycles in this country. But the Republicans are setting up things as if they're going to be in power forever. And my guess is that however George Bush implements these 9/11 Commission recommendations, he's going to do them in a way that will enhance or increase the power of the executive branch to make war and to participate in decisions of war at the expense of the legislative branch. And the founders were very, 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 very explicit. We do not want to give the power to make war to the commander-in-chief. He executes war. He's the commander-in-chief of the military. But he does not have the power to decide to go to war. That rests solely with the Congress, because the Congress is more directly elected by we the people than is the president, who is elected through the Electoral College. And Bush is going to change it, and a lot of Republicans are very worried about that. And now you have Republicans coming out and saying, we're very worried about this. Here, this Reuters story. Ohio resident Bob Stewart says of President Bush, he's been a world-class polarizer. I don't know if I can stomach 4 more years with him as president. He misled us into the war in Iraq and has mismanaged everything since. A raging Democrat? No. Stewart is a Republican. An insurance agent, 44 years old, from Anderson Township near Cincinnati, voted for Bush in 2000, a registered Republican. He says, I just have a gut feeling that Kerry can be trusted to make the right, courageous decisions and will make a good president. He showed that with his heroism in Vietnam. Bush, he says, this is a Republican in Ohio, Bush is supposed to be a conservative, yet he's run up the biggest federal deficit in history. One thing that really turned me away from Bush as a lifelong Catholic was to see Bush go to the Vatican and try to get the Pope to come down hard on Kerry for his stand on abortion. That was absolutely appalling. I'll share a few other Republican insights with you in just a moment. 1-866-889-8894. Jerry in North Carolina is on the line. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Good afternoon. This morning I heard something on the news, and I didn't hear all of it, and I'm just wondering if you heard it and you can explain it to me.
I'll do my best.
It was a report that I think originated from the Department of the Army about George Bush being AWOL.
Right.
And confirmed that he was away from his duty for at least 4 months.
Yeah, the Associated Press is in the middle of a lawsuit. The Pentagon first said, oh, we lost the records. And then they said, oh, we found some of the records, and they released, this was actually last week, and they released them, and an analysis of the records, according to the Associated Press, indicates that these records don't demonstrate that George ever showed up for his service. There's no proof that he didn't. You can't prove a negative. But you know, I guarantee you, George is not going to stand up on that stage with 12 guys who served with him in the military, like John Kerry did.
Right, right.
And there's still this lawsuit ongoing in Texas. It turns out that the Texas Air National Guard apparently does have all the records, the original copies. And, however, because it's the state of Texas and not the federal government, there's some difference in how the Freedom of Information Act is applied. And so George W. Bush has to sign a form authorizing the Texas Air National Guard to release his records, and he's refusing to do that. He's refusing to release the records about whether or not he took drug tests. He's refusing to release the records about whether or not he showed up for service. He's refusing to release the records, about whether or not he was reprimanded for this, whether the Army Air National Guard looked into this, all of this stuff. He's just saying, no, you can't know about it. So my guess...
I just don't see how CBS, ABC, and NBC can be so small anymore. People, I used to think they were, the people of character giants of the industry. But, boy, they have really become small.
You know what happened, Jerry? I remember this change. I mean, back when I first worked in radio news in the late 60s and early 70s, I did radio news from 69 or 70, more or less. I was a DJ for a couple of years. And then I did news for about 7 years, up until around 78. And right up until the day I left radio news, the news department, and this was in a local radio station. It was in the capital of Michigan, Lansing, Michigan. But it was a local radio station. We knew that the news department had nothing to do with the advertising department. The advertising guys couldn't come in and say, hey, we've got a new advertiser, this new dealership. Why don't you do a story about their opening a new office? It just didn't happen. It would have been on the order of, I can't think of a good metaphor, a good analogy, but it would have been embarrassing. I mean, everybody would have...
It would have been paying for news.
Just everybody understood it would have been wrong. It would have been like somebody exposing themselves in public or something. It was wrong. And along came Reagan with this idea. And of course, in 78 was the Boston versus Bilotti Supreme Court decision that said money is speech and corporations have rights to free speech and corporations can give money to politicians. That kicked the door open for the corruption that came in with the Reagan administration. And then Reagan came along and he did away with the Fairness Doctrine and allowed these huge media buy-ups, these huge mergers, because he stopped enforcing the Sherman Act. Because we actually have had, periods of time back in the 60s, for example, when they were breaking up large media combines. And Reagan said, no problem, you guys. You can just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And all of a sudden, I forget which year it was, but I believe it was CBS was the first that said, we're going to take our news department and put it under the control of our entertainment division, rather than having it be a standalone department. And once it became under the control of the entertainment division, it became subservient to profit. And then the question was no longer, is this news report the truth? Are we serving the public good? Because after 86, I believe it was, when Reagan did away with the Fairness Doctrine, essentially he did away with the requirement that broadcast media serve the public good. And, the absolute enforceable requirement. And the question no longer became, are we serving the public good? The question became, are we going to get the highest ratings so that we can get the most dollars for our advertising? And thus was born infotainment, which is what they call news today. That's what's going on, Jerry.
Sad.
Yeah, it's sad, it's tragic. And thanks for the call. Thanks for pointing it out. Good to hear from you. And 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Another Republican, according to CNN, this one in Michigan, Dan Martin. He's run for local office as a Republican, in fact. He says his biggest disappointment is that Bush's reputation as a compassionate conservative governor of Texas hasn't proven true in the White House. Dan says, quote, the foreign policy is a mess. The offensive in Iraq is reckless and built on bad decision-making. On the domestic front, I understand the terrorism has struck and he's occupied, but any real progress is ground to a halt. 32-year-old lifelong Republican. Things are changing, folks, and you're leading the change. 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Formation. Tom Hartman brings how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we... When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be...
1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be joy for the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Mega media giant Clear Channel Communications in 42nd Street, Wynn Rebecca Miles reports.
Project Billboard, an anti-war group based in California and interested in encouraging public debate, filed a lawsuit against Clear Channel Communications, What is at stake is a billboard advertisement that Project Billboard contracted to run with Clear Channel. The advertisement featured a red, white, blue character of a bomb with the caption, "Democracy is better taught by example, not by war." Clear Channel rejected the first advertisement, saying they were not going to run bomb copy in New York City. Project Billboard then replied with a red and white blue dove, accompanied by the same words, but this was a call into Clear Channel Communications for comment, but it by news broadcast had no response. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Programs from George Walker Bush. Here's one. Huge bear works leg. Yeah, well, think about it. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Chuck in Warren, Michigan's on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Well, what I heard last night on a talk show that our government is giving thousands of dollars to Iraqi soldiers to put down their weapons and don't shoot at Americans.
Right.
And in the same time, this commentator said that the American soldiers coming back, the Guard and Reservists coming back, they're coming back to no job. The employers are telling them, we hired somebody to take your place while you're gone, play soldier boy, and we're not firing him. Take us to court. We know there's federal law. Take us to court.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a guy that's happening to right now. He's in the reserves. He's on active duty, and he just lost his job. And so, it won't be there when he comes back. It's just, yes. Yes, that is happening.
My solution to that is, if we can give thousands of dollars to the Iraqis.
Try millions.
Millions of dollars. Right?
Billions. Billions. Tens of billions. Go ahead, Ken. Okay.
If we can give that money to the Iraqis, why can't we give the soldiers, when they come back, give them the same wage that they had before they left? There's a federal law.
We can't do that, Ken, because we can't do that, Ken, because we've got
to
have
to give them back.
Yeah, we can't do that because we've got to give tax cuts to the wealthiest people in America. You know, Dick Cheney's got to have his $300,000 tax cut. George H.W. Bush Sr. has to have his $4.5 million tax cut. They've got to have their tax cuts, and we just can't give that money to the soldiers, Ken.
Well,
I think you get it. That
a bunch of BS.
Yeah, I'm being a little sarcastic here. Ken, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. You make a good point and well said. And thanks for listening to the program there in Warren, Michigan.
I listen to you every day.
That's great. Thank you very much. Keep on listening. Spread the word, because that's how we're going to take back this country, is by spreading the word. Share it with others. Let people know what's going on. Wake up, America. And you know who's the instrument of waking up America? You. Not just me. I'm just this guy, you know, blithering on the radio and writing books. No, it's us. But it's going to be done one person at a time. Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you, bringing you uncommon sense from the radical middle.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Workers at a sugar plant in Minnesota have found themselves locked out with no contact from the company. More than 220 employees of the Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Cooperation in Renville arrived at work last Thursday and found that they could not enter the plant. Many of the 500 farmers that are members of the cooperation also did not find out about the lockout until the workers did.
This week, car giant Ford Motor Company is launching on August 5th its first American-made hybrid SUV called the Ford Escape. Produced by union workers in a Kansas City plant, Escape is being celebrated as a breakthrough in reducing U.S. oil dependence. The UAW, Sierra Club, Apollo Alliance, United Steelworkers, and the Audubon Society are encouraging other auto manufacturers to produce hybrid vehicles. They're kicking off the Green Machines Tour, promoting hybrids and fuel efficiency in an effort to convince state and federal governments to fund new environmentally friendly technologies. Judy Ansell is the director of the Institute for Labor Studies at UMKC.
Well, a hybrid uses much less gas. The new hybrid Escape will achieve 30 to 36 miles per gallon, or more than a 50% improvement over the standard Escape. In terms of cleaner air, in terms of less dependence on foreign imported oil. This is a good thing for the United States and for American consumers.
Demand for the hybrid Escape is expected to be high. There are waiting lists in the U.S. to purchase foreign-produced hybrids like the Toyota Prius or Honda Civic, and U.S. registration of hybrid vehicles jumped 26% last year.
A lawsuit has been filed against photographic giant Kodak alleging racial discrimination. The suit says the company has been paying black employees less than white employees for more than a decade. In addition, it claims that African Americans were promoted less and that the company allowed Caucasian employees to harass them. The suit also alleges that Kodak would retaliate against employees who complained. The class action lawsuit was filed on behalf of 10 black employees, but covers at least 1,000 both past and present. The suit seeks an end to the discrimination and punitive damages. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Although various state legislatures have complained loudly about state contractors sending jobs overseas, 42 of the 50 states do business with companies that offshore. A new report from Good Jobs First and IT industry organizer Wash Tech says 6 of the 42 are in the process of changing their laws to keep their business domestic. Most contracts that use overseas workers involve call centers based in India and Mexico that provide customer service to people enrolled in state welfare programs.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
What do Kalamazoo, Evansville, Albuquerque, Stockton, Phoenix, Columbia, St. Louis, and Charleston have in common? They're some of the cities where the Secret Service or police have jailed people for displaying anti-Bush signs during public appearances by His Eminence King George W. Is this America, the land of the free? That's what Nicole and Jeff Rank asked themselves this July 4th as they were taken away in handcuffs by police in their town of Charleston, West Virginia. What was their heinous crime? They were guilty of not being Bush supporters. George W.'s Independence Day trip to Charleston was billed as an official presidential visit, not a campaign rally. Nicole and Jeff, two patriotic, hard-working, tax-paying Americans, were in the crowd, quietly exercising their free speech rights. They wore T-shirts declaring, "Love America, hate Bush." They had proper tickets to the event. They proudly sang the national anthem with everyone else. They were in no way disorderly, but they were not politically correct. So they were summarily arrested, taken to jail, fingerprinted, and charged with trespassing. Others who were there wearing pro-Bush T-shirts and Bush campaign paraphernalia at this public event on public property were not arrested. It seems that the Bushites define trespassers by their political beliefs. Nicole, who worked for the Federal Emergency Management Agency in Charleston, was promptly told that her services were no longer required. Technically, she wasn't fired, but she was released from her job and not reassigned, meaning she no longer gets paid. This is Jim Hightower saying, but Nicole and Jeff are still not bowing to King George. They're fighting Bush's absurd, un-American assault on their constitutional right to dissent. They're not the only ones being denied their right to speak out. Dissenters all across America are being treated like this. To fight this autocratic lockdown, call the ACLU, 212-549-2500.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just from making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George the W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 7 minutes past the hour. What's up with the voting situation? Here we have some states who have actually made it illegal to audit a voting machine. Just the strangest stuff going on. And so much of this tracks back to the United States Supreme Court in 2000 when George Bush sued Al Gore. And implicitly the state of Florida saying, no, we really don't want to count every vote, and it's going to cause irreparable harm. Renata Adler is a graduate of law, Yale Law School, teaches at Boston University, one of the first women to cover the war in Vietnam, a staffer at the New Yorker magazine. She's written a bunch of books, and she has a new one out, which is absolutely extraordinary, and it is... I'm loving these new small books that are coming out because you can read it in a day or two. Irreparable Harm, the U.S. Supreme Court and the Decision That Made George W. Bush President. Renata Adler, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks. Hi, Tom.
Hi. You call this the most lawless decision in the history of the court. I mean, the court, by definition, well, at least since Mabry versus Madison, is defining the law. How can you call this a lawless decision?
Well, one thing about this book is really it's a reprint of a piece that I wrote at the time in the New Republic and right after the decision. And the way the court can make the most lawless decision in the history of the court is, well, look, if you're in law school, one of the first things you learn about federal jurisdiction, you ask yourself about everything is, do they have the power under the Constitution? Do they have the power to do this? Do they have the power to do that? The Supreme Court took steps here which it did not have the power under the Constitution to take. So it seized that power. And it's part of a seizure of power that's been going on, that started before and continued through. And what we see already is this acceptance of voting machines everywhere. It's very strong in the decision, the preference that Justice Rehnquist has, in particular for voting machines. They all do.
Hmm.
No, I meant to say the majority does. They believe in the machine. So,
yeah.
And the uncheckable machine, I suppose, followed as the night the day. So is that a vote at all?
Yeah. Well, you know, in 1803, the Constitution does not give the Supreme Court the right to overrule Congress. And in 1803, in the Mabry versus Madison case, Chief Justice John Marshall, who was John Adams had packed the court with Federalists before he left and had put Marshall on, who was Thomas Jefferson's lifelong arch enemy. He was a cousin, I believe he was the first cousin of John Adams, wasn't he? The second cousin. Anyhow, you know, Marshall's on there, and he says the court has the right to decide whether or not the legislation passed by the legislative branch is constitutional. And Jefferson had a fit. He wrote this long letter to Benjamin Rush, in which he said, you know, if this decision stands, the Constitution has become a thing of wax. And he just ranted on and on. Of course, he lost. Jefferson did, and Madison did in that case. And then you look over the history of the court from there, and there really is this kind of long history of the court taking on more and more power, changing the nature of the Constitution. 1886, Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad. The headnote, anyway, the case doesn't actually say it, but the headnote written by John Chandler Bancroft Davis, the court's reporter at that time, says corporations are persons and entitled to equal protection of the 14th Amendment. And then we get up to now,
Tom,
Bush v. Gore.
I didn't mean to interrupt you here, but you're the specialist in Jefferson, but that was one of the really great decisions because it spoke of the power of judicial review, right? That there are, for the balance of powers, it's very important that under certain circumstances, the court has the power to review decisions of various kinds made by the other branches.
Right.
But here, to interfere in the actual process of voting when there was no... There's and to interfere with something. Did you want to go on? I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I was. What I was setting up was that it looks to me, when you look at like the historical arc of the court, that there's this long history of the court grabbing more and more power as time goes on. And isn't this just a logical step down that road? And if so, at what point do we end up with a system that is irreparably broken?
Well, that is a fascinating. That's a fascinating way to put it. Because of course, what happened here, and I hadn't realized it. When, in a truly eloquent dissent and a brilliant dissent by Justice Scalia, the only dissent, in saying it was unconstitutional to have a law that permitted the creation of the Office of Special Prosecutor.
Right.
And boy, was he right. But one of the things that I never had noticed until perhaps this decision, is that, in effect, in a footnote, the decision grants the appointment of the special prosecutor to the Chief Justice, who is Justice Rehnquist. So in a way, we owed Starr, we owed them all to the Chief Justice at that point.
Hmm.
So that's a huge seizure of power.
So that's the Chief
Scalia
Justice.
Scalia has just argued that all prosecutions belong in the executive, and so they do. And
yeah.
Suddenly, Justice Rehnquist is saying, wait a minute, who could be better to appoint prosecutors than the court? And you get a chill.
Or than he himself.
I think it's been going on from there. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, then he himself, essentially, he's saying. It's like taking on executive power. I mean, this is... But here...
That's it. I mean, he, in a way, I mean, you know, now his robes from Iolanthe and that travesty of an impeachment of President Clinton looks quite different to me. I mean, there's a huge seizure of power on the part of the Chief Justice.
Yeah. We're talking with Renata Adler,
right.
The author of Irreparable Harm. And just a quick kind of side question here. Are you familiar with Rehnquist's dissent in Boston versus Pilotti?
I am not.
Okay. I don't want to get too technobabble here, and just blow away people who are not Supreme Court junkies like you and I are. But make a note to go read Rehnquist's dissent in Boston v. Bilotti. It is mind-boggling. Anyhow, you said that the majority decision in Bush v. Gore, the Supreme Court case that ultimately decided who became president of the United States, contains outright lies and outright misrepresentations of the law. What are those lies?
Okay, well, one of their lies is that justices were in accord, except with only the exception of the remedy, and that's an absolute lie. I mean, they were not in accord at all. The dissents were very, very, very strong dissents, and to say only the remedy was the whole question.
Yeah.
And here it is: Justices Breyer and Souter tried to salvage something from the debacle by giving the Florida Supreme Court another chance to meet even the most specious arguments. Well, I mean, that's some agreement on everything. Here it is. And there are, of course, some outright lies. Even the statement that seven justices of the courts essentially agree, for example, and that, quote, the only disagreement is as to the remedy, is false. The two justices whom the majority tries to embrace, Souter and Breyer, began their dissents with clear statements that the court should not have taken the case, that it was wrong to grant a stay, and that the decision itself is wrong. That's pretty...
That's strong language.
Isn't a lie. What's a lie?
Yeah, that's very strong language. Now, the ultimate point of the decision of Bush versus Gore, and this is the thing that, frankly, I doubt most Americans even know this, was that correct me if I'm wrong, that the court said that if the state of Florida is allowed to count every vote in the state of Florida, that would cause irreparable harm to George W. Bush, who was the plaintiff in the case. And therefore...
Isn't that something?
Right. And therefore, the vote count had to be stopped. And in fact, it had to be stopped even before the court issued a judgment, which in effect stopped it no matter what. And how on earth can the United States Supreme Court say that in an election They're going to take the position that if all the votes are counted, it's going to cause irreparable harm to one or the other party, particularly in an election that is decided in November, but the person isn't installed into office until January. There's certainly enough time there to figure out what's going on. We weren't in the middle of a war, at least not that we knew of. It wasn't a time of national emergency. How could they possibly justify this irreparable harm?
Well, they couldn't. As you know, Tom, there are four tests of whether you may enter an injunction, and this was an injunction, an emergency motion to enjoin the count from going forward. And one of the tests, I mean, one of the unmistakable tests of an injunction, whether there's irreparable harm, is whether equal harm would occur to the other party
right.
if you were to decide it otherwise.
Right.
So right on its face, right there. I mean, how can they argue that there would not be irreparable harm to equally irreparable harm to candidate Gore if they decided it as they did? So
in other words, it was a fallacy.
To be serious,
it was a fallacy. It was just absolutely wrong. And then they go along and they say essentially, okay, we're claiming that this is going to cause irreparable harm to George W. Bush if all the votes are counted, and we know that that is such BS. That is such absolute nonsense. That to cover our butts on this thing, we're going to write right into the decision that future courts, looking back for precedent, should not consider this case one of those cases that they can quote, essentially. Is that right?
I mean, that is the almost in a way the deepest blow at the system that we have, because if a court can decide suddenly that this case, and this case alone, is one that it will decide, and what it says in this case does not correspond to anything that went before and nothing that came after, that is the end of our system of precedence, which is incredibly important. The court always has to say, this is in accordance with the law as it always was. And they went spitefully out of their way. I mean, by they, I mean the Rehnquist Five on this case. They went spitefully out of their way to pretend that certain very important civil rights cases, which had nothing to do with this at all, were some sort of precedent for this, but of course they weren't. There is no precedent for this arrogation of power, none. And there we are, another irreparable harm. What they said they seemed to think there was to the American people, because they might have this terrible anxiety because they wanted to see this thing decided sooner rather than. I don't think anybody was in a state of terrible. Moreover, I mean, it was so unnecessary in that by any way it came out, Bush was sure to win.
I mean,
as it turns out, as a technicality. At worst, two slates of electors would have been sent by the state of Florida. Congress would make a choice. If it wasn't for Bush, it would go back to Florida. The governor there was Bush. It would have been for Bush. It was a Republican state. So
right.
President Bush was bound to be president in any case. So why did they take it? Well,
unless the count went forward. I mean, if the count actually continued and it showed that
it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter because still Florida was determined to send two. It would have in that case sent two sets of electors.
Right. And the Republican controlled Congress
was in such an uproar.
Yeah, because of the electoral.
And in the
college.
End, it would have come out for Bush, no matter whether Gore had won or not. But that's what's so important, because you see what they did. One of the reasons for deciding it this way and on an emergency basis is that they didn't want it to play out as it would play out with George Bush president anyway, but it would have been transparent by what process he got there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And that they just wanted not to show.
Renata Adler, the author of Irreparable Harm. We've got about 20 seconds left. Do you think that the court is going to mess with the next election?
I think they may not have to.
Yeah.
They've messed so severely that we'll have those machines and we won't be able to check on them. I mean, there's always been corruption.
Yeah, and then
here or there in elections, so what? But this is the first time that the court just comes out so heavily in favor of it.
Yeah, and so obviously. Thank you, Renata Adler, Irreparable Harm, the U.S. Supreme Court, the decision that made George W. Bush president. Thanks for being a guest with us today. You can pick up the book in local bookstores. It's online. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour. Stick around.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service.
Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species."
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you by the Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research, www.cascar.org. Futurist Benjamin Krim, 888-242-8272 for free tape. And Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, M-A-C-S, 1-800-511-MACS for all things Macintosh. And let us not forget, in these times in the progressive, have you seen this website, PrizeWise? I think it's PrizeWise.com, where instead of buying things, you enter a contest for them. pretty soon we'll see George Bush on there. Yeah, you can bid a buck for a used president. Who knows? It was a stretch. I knew it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to get on the show, if you have something you want to share or ask about or comment on, rant about, argue over, you are more than welcome. Our website, TomHartmann.com, www.TomHartmann.com. Interesting story about what the state of Florida knew and when they knew it. Let me share that with you in just a second here. First, we got Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've been listening to your commentary about the commons. And so I did some research, and somehow I never picked up on this, but common law has to do with the commons.
Sure.
And there was a huge pressure back in England somewhere around 1805 to go back to feudalism. And they came very, very close to actually getting rid of all the commons, fencing them off and making them all part of the feudal estates and everybody basically being a farmer or sharecropper on that. And it's interesting because that is exactly, I mean, you talk about corporatism, but if you look at the parallels, it's absolutely identical. They attempted to pack Parliament so that they could push that through. And essentially you had a weak king, which...
And it's a fascinating slice of British history that most people in the UK are well familiar with and most Americans are clueless about.
Well, I'll tell you something. If we don't get a clue really fast, we're going to be living it.
Well, we've been through the same thing here in the United States. We went through it in the 1880s and 1890s, you know, with the charter-mongering era and the Standard Oil Trusts and the era of the robber barons. And really, it was our grandparents' generation who is the last generation to have any good, clear recollection of what happened and how Franklin Roosevelt, how Teddy Roosevelt first tried to stand up to them and succeeded to some extent. 1907, he actually got a law passed that made it a felony for a corporation to give money to politicians.
I just have one other question because that was a success where the people won out. How did Athens and Athenian democracy finally collapse at the end of the day?
Well, it was a series of things. First of all, you had Socrates who was claiming to love his country and love democracy, and yet was teaching Plato and giving these speeches basically saying this democracy thing isn't going to work. And there was the revolution of the 30 and the 300 or something. There were these two revolts, and that both lasted less than a year, that brought down the government and replaced it with these pseudo dictatorships. I believe they were both.
That was the oligarchy. Yeah.
And he didn't move. He wasn't required to leave. And in fact, it was students of his who led both of these, and that's why. At the end, they told him he had to drink hemlock, you know, and Plato never forgave them for it. But ultimately, what it came down to was Alexander the Great conquered them.
And well, Alexander the Great was Aristotle's most famous student.
That's right.
It was Plato's most famous student.
That's right. Who was Socrates' student? It all goes back to Socrates. He was anti-democracy. He, like Alexander Hamilton, believed that a modified aristocracy was the most stable form of government.
Cool. Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call, Chuck. 1-866-889-8894. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit
the plant. Many of the 500 farmers that are members of the cooperation also did not find out about the lockout until the workers did.
This week, car giant Ford Motor Company is launching on August 5th its first American-made hybrid SUV called the Ford Escape. Produced by union workers in a Kansas City plant, Escape is being celebrated as a breakthrough in reducing U.S. oil dependence. The UAW, Sierra Club, Apollo Alliance, United Steelworkers, and the Audubon Society are encouraging other auto manufacturers to produce hybrid vehicles. They're kicking off the Green Machines Tour, promoting hybrids and fuel efficiency in an effort to convince state and federal governments to fund new environmentally friendly technologies. Judy Ansell is the director of the Institute for Labor Studies at UMKC.
Well, a hybrid uses much less gas. The new hybrid Escape will achieve 30 to 36 miles per gallon, or more than a 50% improvement over the standard Escape. In terms of cleaner air, in terms of less dependence on foreign imported oil, this is a good thing for the United States and for American consumers.
Demand for the hybrid Escape is expected to be high. There are waiting lists in the U.S. to purchase foreign-produced hybrids like the Toyota Prius or Honda Civic, and U.S. registration of hybrid vehicles jumped 26% last year.
A lawsuit has been filed against photographic giant Kodak alleging racial discrimination. The suit says the company has been paying black employees less than white employees for more than a decade. In addition, it claims that African Americans were promoted less and that the company allowed Caucasian employees to harass them. The suit also alleges that Kodak would retaliate against employees who complained. The class action lawsuit was filed on behalf of 10 black employees, but covers at least 1,000 both past and present. The suit seeks an end to the discrimination and punitive damages. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Although various state legislatures have complained loudly about state contractors sending jobs overseas, 42 of the 50 states do business with companies that offshore. A new report from Good Jobs First and IT industry organizer Wash Tech says 6 of the 42 are in the process of changing their laws to keep their business domestic. Most contracts that use overseas workers involve call centers based in India and Mexico that provide customer service to people enrolled in state welfare programs.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. You know the old expression, when pigs fly? Maybe if you stick one in a big enough cannon, you could get a pig to fly. It looks like maybe happening with Walmart. I think it's a reasonable analogy. A Walmart store, this is from the Associated Press, a Walmart store in Saguenay, Quebec. I'm sure it's pronounced with a very beautiful French pronunciation, but I just can't do that. Sorry. I could do German. But anyhow, a Walmart store in this Quebec city may become the first store of the retail giant to be unionized. After the Quebec Labor Relations Board accredited a union there to represent the workers, the Quebec Federation of Labor announced the accreditation today. The store in Saguenay, 200 kilometers north of Quebec City, has about 180 employees. The union represents a large majority of the store's employees, said Marie-Josée Lemieux, president of the local union of the United Food and Commercial Workers. This is a big thing. This is a big deal. He says, we hope that Walmart will accept this decision and negotiate a labor contract with the union. There are no unionized Walmart stores anywhere in the world, although there are a handful of meat workers at Walmart stores in Texas who are members of UFCW, United Food and Commercial Workers. But here now they've got A union certified in Quebec, and that's a story that is worth watching. For those of us who are concerned about the survival of the American middle class and thus American democracy, this is a big deal. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. John in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just want to make a brief comment about the terror hype.
Hey, before you do that, there's something I wanted to say, and I don't want to forget. For those folks who are interested, Chuck in the last call raised the whole question of Greece and democracy, and there's an absolutely brilliant book about Greek democracy. It's called Sailing the Wine Dark Sea. Sailing the Wine Dark Sea, Why the Greeks Matter. And it's for anybody who's into the history of democracy. It's a fascinating book. So I just wanted to pass that along. Anyhow, back to you, John.
Yeah, about all the terror hype stuff, I was watching the cable news earlier this morning, and they had this news conference with Tom Ridge and Mayor Bloomberg. And it occurred to me, you know, the idea of setting up the straw man,
yep,
kind of thing. They had Ridge saying how, you know, thanking the office workers, you know, that they were showing courage coming to work. And then Mayor Bloomberg was talking about how we will not be intimidated. You know, New York City is open for business and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, it's sort of like setting up this, you know, very probably this fictitious scenario. I mean, it's all kind of...
We will not be intimidated by four-year-old news.
Yeah, exactly. It just showed we really are living in kind of an Orwellian world to some degree.
You know, the last time Tom Ridge came out and said, pay no attention to Ashcroft, he's full of it. You remember that?
Yeah.
He said, this is a quote from Tom Ridge, quote, there is absolutely nothing specific enough to warrant a change in the threat level, end of quote. And here we are now again, and we're doing this thing on information that is 4 years old. It's absolutely amazing. John, thanks for the call. Yeah, you want to make another point? You got it? Okay. Thanks for the call, John. Good to hear from you. Billy in Santa Cruz, California. Santa Cruz, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Billy, how you doing?
I'm fine. I heard you say that if we wanted to rant, we should call, and I'm a ranter.
Yeah, you're a great ranter. Okay, what's your rant, Billy?
Well, actually, I don't have a rant, really. I just love the word rant, the concept. You know, I just thought I should announce the next radio game we're going to play, and you're going to have to give away a book.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay. Well, I'll consider it.
Okay, well, here's
lay it
the game.
On me here.
It's called the October Surprise Game.
Yeah.
And your callers call in and guess what the October surprise will be, and then when we figure it out, the winner calls back.
So they're going to say, see, we found weapons of mass destruction.
That's what I wanted to tell you about. I'm really good at listening close. That's what I do. That's why I've known that Bush has been alive for so very long. That's why I know when he said British intelligence tell us, that's a lie. You know, there's ways of picking up things.
Yeah.
So yeah, the last time I heard Bush speak, he talked about, you know, those weapons of mass destruction, I still think we'll find them.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
your October surprise.
As quick as FedEx can get over there. Billy, thanks for the call. Good point. Well made. We'll put together a contest for that. I think that's a great idea. Victoria Jones, our Washington Bureau Chief, is on the line. Hey, Victoria, you're reporting from Washington, D.C. there with the Talk Radio News Service. What's happening in Washington?
Well, quite a lot is happening in Washington, which is unusual because in August, usually there's nothing happening in Washington. Two major things. One is, of course, the terror alert was increased to orange, which nobody really knows what that means in Washington, and the subways still are not working very well, and there's no decent evacuation plan. In fact, the evacuation plan says it would take between 4 to 6 hours to get out of the city. So if you've got a biochem attack, unless the wind's blowing in the wrong direction, you're done. So it's good for us all to know that. The other part of it is that the Washington police closed down the area around the Capitol today with barricades, with about 20 different police checkpoints, and this is going to stay that way indefinitely. And this is really a major blow for our freedom and our civil liberties, because once these streets close, they don't usually reopen.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I was in Washington a few months ago, and Louise and I were there, and we tried to walk. In fact, we were with Congressman Bernie Sanders, and we were going to walk through the Capitol to get from one Senate office building to another. And Bernie veered off, and he had to go someplace. And we got about halfway in, and they wouldn't let us go through. I mean, it was just like, sorry. And I'd been there just a year early. You could walk pretty well. Actually, it was a couple of years early. You could walk anywhere. It's like it's just they've locked this thing down.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary. So we have that as a backdrop to the committee hearings about the 9/11 Commission report, which are taking place this month, in which the House and Senate committees have said the National Intelligence Director does not have control of the budget, then it would be better to not appoint one at all. It would, in fact, be better to do nothing than to appoint somebody without teeth.
Now, here's the question that I have, Victoria, and maybe you can track this down as time goes on here when you call in with these reports. Is George W. Bush, to the extent that he's supporting some of the findings, and I'm sure he's going to spin them around however he wants them, is he going to be able to, or is he even going to try, I'd be amazed if he didn't, but frankly, is he going to try to do this in a way that's going to enhance presidential power? In other words,
yes.
Okay.
There's no question. He already has. And it's interesting you say that because Commissioner Bob Kerry addressed this two or three times, and Commissioner Layman is clearly in agreement with them because they're in agreement on this. He was urging the committee, don't give you the National Intelligence Director. And the way he's doing it, basically, it does not have teeth. It does not have power over the budget. It's not a cabinet member. He can hire and fire the person. Whether it's subject to Senate confirmation, I don't know.
It's a figurehead.
So there were going to be others that he was going to implement. Commissioner Labor made the point this morning that the report's recommendations are not a Chinese menu.
Yeah, yeah. But George Bush is going to take him as one. And it looks like he's just going to create a figurehead. He's going to put a cosmetic patch on he's going to put a Band-Aid on a cancer.
That is a concern.
Yeah, amazing.
That is a concern, and the commissioners were very clear that it's better to do nothing than to do it wrong.
Yeah. Victoria, thank you so much for calling in with your report today. I look forward to talking with you as the week goes on. And have
you
a wonderful afternoon. Thanks.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Nick in Michigan's on the line. Hey, Nick, what's up?
Concentration camps, but they could be... Concentration camps, exactly.
Yeah. There are a lot of people who are very concerned about the power that FEMA has, and I'm one of them. One of the problems is that most of that information is so deeply classified that you just can't even find it, much less make it public.
Okay, because I saw it on Alex Jones' website and actually saw some actual pictures of it.
Yeah.
One particular camp, and it was in Oregon somewhere. It was on federal or state land or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not frankly as concerned about the camps because it's, you know, as far as I know, the jury's still. I mean, there are people who are arguing that that's a flying saucer thing. You know, it's not real, but it's the power that FEMA has. I mean, they could take a university, for example, that has dormitories and just say, okay, everybody out of the dorms. We're putting up razor wire around the university. This is now the camp, and they could do that in about 3 days. I mean, they don't need a camp. There are so many facilities. They could commandeer hotels and put guards at all the doors. You can't get in and out. I mean, there are ways that if the federal government wanted to lock down the United States citizens, they could do it. Short of, you know, going out and building concentration camps. I'm more concerned with the legislation and the implementation of it. But frankly, I'm not an expert on that, so I'm just saying I'm concerned.
I have some concerns about that, and also the fact that you hear these reports where they move so-called detainees around this so-called block of prisoners that nobody's ever seen.
Yeah,
they're kind of
ghost detainees.
Around.
Yeah. This is a real. What you're seeing right now is the dark side of government. I mean, George Washington made the comment that the government was like fire; it can burn, or it can be used to help humans. You know, and government has to be the way that Washington and the founders envisioned it, and that is that it represents us. We are the power; government is the instrument. Not government is the power, and it gets used against us. And particularly the conservative agenda is to take the power of government and then hold it in a very small number of hands, and that's absolutely wrong. It's not the ideals of democracy. Nick, I got to move along. Got a couple other callers here. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Walt in California is on the line. Hey, Walt, we're in California.
Hi, Tom. Tom, Rents.com had an article, and it was from a newspaper in Iraq, that said that...
Within a couple of days of the Republican convention, then you owe me a call saying that I'm right. And if you're right, call me up, and I'll send you one of my books.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Walt. 1-866-889-8894. Dennis in Long Island, New York. What's up, Dennis?
Hello, Tom. This is Dennis, your old pal.
Uh-huh.
You remember me?
I do. What's up, Dennis?
Well, I called Nigel. I emailed him. I wanted to know how to listen to your program. He never replied. I wanted the toll-free number so I could call in.
Well, you've called. It's good to hear from you, Dennis. Thank you very much. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Time to take a break. 10 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
A leading environmentalist says a growing gap between haves and have-nots is at the root of international terrorism. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Resentment is on the rise around the world, according to Paul Ehrlich, and it's directed at the world's wealthiest societies. Ehrlich and his wife Anne have written a new book called One with Nineveh. It argues that the growing gap between rich and poor countries is driving terrorism.
9/11 should have been more than catastrophic enough to open our eyes to dealing with the roots of terrorism. After all, we live in a world where something like 3 billion people live on $2 a day or less, which is growing in the United States and between nations in many cases, is something we all should be concerned about. Because remember, not only are the poor more susceptible to diseases that can move to us, but of course they also are now armed with nuclear weapons, with biological weapons, with chemical weapons, and so they are able to make lots of trouble for us, even if we thought it were ethical for us to continue to live high on the hog while they starve.
That's Paul Ehrlich, author of the new book, One with Nineveh. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, you know, the Florida voter list, this is just a fascinating story where they discovered. They discovered that the felon purge list that had magically, mysteriously, and wonderfully helped Jeb Bush get reelected in 2000, helped George W. Bush at least have the appearance of winning the state of Florida. Because some 57,000 mostly African American voters got bounced off the rolls, the majority of them people who were not felons. Well, then they come up now, this is just last month, they come up with another list.
We got another list. We got some more felons here.
And then it was pointed out, this is another 48,000 convicted felons. $2.7 million contract with Accenture. This is the article by David Kidwell in the Miami Herald. Well before they abruptly discarded it, Florida election official Simon, Florida director of the American Civil Liberties Union, says, this memo is striking. After 2 years of constant failures and fixes, they rushed this out the door. We're talking about one of our most fundamental rights, the right to vote. Now, what's the memo that they're talking about? Well, a May 2nd internal memo ordered personally by Secretary of State Glenda Hood details a half dozen missed deadlines, broken promises, failed software programs, repeated miscues, and personnel problems. They've known for some time, turns out. This is the list released on July 2nd, contains 2,100 felons whose voting rights have been restored. Most were Democrats, many were black. And the amazing thing, they have known for years of these kinds of problems in these kinds of lists. For years, since 1998, it turns out. The East India Company and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of American from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Workers at a sugar plant in Minnesota have found themselves locked out with no contact from the company. More than 220 employees of the Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Cooperation in Renville arrived at work last Thursday and found that they could not enter the plant. Many of the 500 farmers that are members of the cooperation also did not find out about the lockout until the workers did.
This week, car giant Ford Motor Company is launching on August 5th its first American-made hybrid SUV called the Ford Escape. Produced by union workers in a Kansas City plant, Escape is being celebrated as a breakthrough in reducing U.S. oil dependence. The UAW, Sierra Club, Apollo Alliance, United States...
...for the United States and for American consumers.
Demand for the hybrid Escape is expected to be high. There are waiting lists in the U.S. to purchase foreign-produced hybrids like the Toyota Prius or Honda Civic, and U.S. registration of hybrid vehicles jumped 26% last year.
A lawsuit has been filed against photographic giant Kodak alleging racial discrimination. The suit says the company has been paying black employees less than white employees for more than a decade. In addition, it claims that African Americans were promoted less and that the company allowed Caucasian employees to harass them. The suit also alleges that Kodak would retaliate against employees who complained. The class action lawsuit was filed on behalf of 10 black employees, but covers at least 1,000, both past and present. The suit seeks an end to the discrimination and punitive damages. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Although various state legislatures have complained...
The company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
Very soon now, you'll be hearing and reading red, white, and blue editorials about your responsibility to go vote this fall. Every vote counts, they'll cry. Unless, of course, it doesn't. Many of our votes this year will be cast and tallied on corporate-controlled electronic voting machines that keep no trackable record of our ballots. These computers can easily malfunction and be manipulated, meaning they can be used to cheat and steal elections. Here's a question. Shouldn't your vote for president or Congress or whatever be at least as secure as a 25-cent bet you might place in a Las Vegas slot machine? Of course. Yet a New York Times investigation finds that gamblers are more protected than voters. For example, the software to all gambling machines is on file with the state, and the machines are constantly spot-checked by public officials. But corporate purveyors of electronic voting machines consider their software a trade secret, off-limits to public inspection. Also, if a company wants to sell a gambling device, it must submit to a criminal background check and register its employees. To sell computerized voting devices, however, a corporation only has to convince a local election official to buy its stuff. No checks required. Then there's the conflict of interest issue. The technical labs that certify gambling devices must be independent of the makers of those machines. For voting machines, however, the certifying labs are chosen and paid for by the manufacturers. And what if you think you've been cheated? With a slot machine, you have a right to an immediate inspection, and investigators are on call at all hours, empowered to open the machines and find the flaw or fraud. But with electronic voting machines, there are no...
Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
Tune in tonight to Hangouts, where you'll meet a pop star with a pool for a living room.
Sorry to interrupt, but why check out other people's dream homes when you can use a home equity loan to create your own? Now at LendingTree.com, you can find home equity rates as low as 3.75% APR. But they won't stay that way forever. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. Or visit LendingTree.com. When banks compete, you win. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and license.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it's unlikely anybody listening is old enough to remember Herbert Hoover, the last president who pushed through a series of gigantic tax cuts for the rich in the first few years of his administration, only to see the inevitable results. Hoover had a campaign slogan for the 1932 election: prosperity is just around the corner. Seriously, I'm not making this up. Herbert Hoover. Prosperity is just around the corner. In the depths of the Great Depression, 1932, that was Herbert Hoover's campaign slogan, and he was campaigning on the idea that if you gave rich people tax cuts, as he had done numerous times, throughout the 1920s, actually, a series of large tax cuts right after World War I. So over a two-year period, Dick Cheney made, say, $600,000. So that's a little more than a half million. So he'll create, with that $500,000, he'll create one job. So if you want a million, if you want 1,000 jobs, you have to spend $500 million. Am I doing the math right? So anyhow, if you want a million jobs, yeah, you'd have to spend $500 billion. $500,000 per job times a million jobs. And sure enough, I mean, that was actually, with a straight face, proposed by George W. Bush, remember?
With a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than a million new jobs.
There you go, $550 billion, 1 million jobs, $550,000 a job. Why not just find a million people and give them each $550,000? They would go out and spend it. I guarantee you, they would spend it. No, we got to give it to folks who will invest it. It's something that had never been tried before Ronald Reagan. Well, other than Herbert Hoover. Herbert Hoover tried it in 1928 and 1929, and the result was the Great Depression. And through a 1930 and 1931 and into 1932, he kept saying, prosperity is just around the corner. And of course, now we get. So, anyhow, but it's a belief. There is no evidence of it. There is no science to back this up. Rational economists laugh at it. It's the irrational idealists, the true believers, who think that there is this utopian world that can be created if the corporations run everything and government just got out of the way. The libertarians and objectivists like Alan Greenspan, for example, who see a world, a black and white world of noble capitalists and evil bureaucrats. But these things, we've confronted these problems before, too. There was, you know, in the era of the robber barons, 1880, 1890, 1900, the very large corporations, Andrew Carnegie, J.P. Morgan, the railroad barons, these very large, the robber barons, they had so corrupted politics. Everyone in America understood that the American politicians were working for the corporations and not for we the people. The middle class was being wiped out. The result was the progressive and populist movement, which led to the direct election of the Senate in 1917, as I recall, 1913 or 1917, and the right of women to vote, 1920. But it also led to Teddy Roosevelt in 1907 passing a law that said that it was illegal for corporations to give money to politicians. A law that was essentially reversed in the Boston versus Bilotti Supreme Court decision 1978, paving the way for Ronald Reagan to come in, grease the skids well greased with lots of corporate money. In any case, back to the belief here. We've got George W. Bush. We are starting to see results from our actions. My administration's economists believe that if we had not passed tax relief... You know, I just have to interrupt him there again. I'm sorry. There was no tax relief. The taxes still have to be paid. The expenses fund, which are both in the black. Oh, they didn't tell you that? Well, it's not a secret. Yeah, you can find it on the Fed's website. It's not a secret. But strangely, you won't hear it reported very much. Anyhow, we are starting to see results from our actions. My administration's economists believe that if we had not passed tax relief, so-called, our unemployment rate would have been nearly one percentage point higher, and as many as 1.5 million Americans would not have the jobs they have today. That's from George Bush's weekly radio address this weekend. Here's the reality. That's the story. Here's the reality. Bush has no accomplishments to brag about when it comes to unemployment. It's just that simple. He's got nothing to brag about. I'm sorry, no accomplishments. Today, the unemployment rate is 5.6% nationally. That's a third higher than when the number of adults who don't have jobs and are not looking for that famous middle-class squeeze, because the conservative agenda is there for there not to be a middle class. You say, what? Are they just nasty folks? No. No, they really believe, and this is the argument that cleaved Alexander Hamilton from Thomas Jefferson. This goes back to the beginning of the founding of this country. The belief that Hamilton held and the conservatives continue to hold, that there should be classes and orders. To quote Russell Kirk in his classic 1953 book, The Conservative Mind, the book that so fired up William F. Buckley. And then featured people like Richard Mellon Scaife and whatnot, that he brought forth the modern incarnation of the conservative movement, fired up Barry Goldwater. There should be classes and orders. That aristocracy is a more stable form of government than rule by the rabble, to quote John Adams, another early conservative. Since the job trough in August of 2003, 1.5 million jobs have been created. That puts George Bush 1.14 million jobs short of where we were in December of 2000. In order to just get to the point where he can say that he's not the first president since Herbert Hoover to end 4 years with fewer jobs than when he started. He's going to have to create 380,000 jobs a month, and it just ain't happening. It is not happening. In addition, the Labor Department announced yesterday that from the start of 2001 to the end of 2003, 11.4 million people lost their jobs. 5.3 million of them from jobs they'd held for more than 3 years. Two-thirds of that 5.3 million people found new jobs. But 57% of those who did find new jobs are being paid less than they were in their previous job. And what are the consequences of this? Well, it's a mess. It's a mess. It's the meltdown of the middle class. Now, again, why would the conservatives say there shouldn't be a middle class? Well, here's two very quick reasons. Number one, if you have a lot of terrified workers, corporations make more profit. And you can just simply juxtapose the fact that in the last 3 years, average pay of the average working American has dropped by over 9% adjusted for inflation, while CEO pay has gone up almost 20% and corporate profits have gone up over 30%. Number one. Just, you know, very simple, very straightforward. And number two is the simple economic reality that you cannot, that a free market economy does not naturally produce a middle class. A middle class comes about as a result of government intervention. Things like, for example, you can deduct your mortgage interest from your taxes, from your income taxes. You have to
making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for. Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270. Haney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago. Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
It could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
But Lava still finds it a nice thing to do.
Yes.
About nude in the sand.
And wouldn't it be nice if that's all, George W.? Welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, along with Grace Slick. Lather. Remember that? I think that's from the Jefferson Airplane album. I guess I am dating myself. In fact, I think I was a DJ when that thing came out. That was long ago and far away. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Roberta in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roberta, what's up?
Yeah, call me Antigone.
Antigone.
I really do take umbrage to your false depiction of the master, Socrates, in answer to the question, what happened to Athenian democracy?
Okay.
That democracy had its failures. It was a very limited democracy. You sound like a dumkopf sometimes.
Okay, I'm sorry, Roberta. I won't dumbcough you anymore, but I will tell you that there is some very, very good scholarship. I wish I could remember this guy's name. He was a regular writer for the New York Times for years and years and years. He retired, and in his old age, he wrote a book. I'll find it, and I'll get it out for I'll get it for you tomorrow, about, you know, the truth about Socrates. And it's absolutely fascinating. And, but, you know, arguing the minutia of Greek democracy, I'm not sure is necessarily what all of our listeners are going to be fascinated by. How about you, Armin, in Sarasota, Florida? Are you fascinated by Greek democracy?
It interests me immensely.
Okay. So what's
now,
up?
I'd
what
like
are you calling
to go
about?
Back to what you would say, conservative mantra, to go out when the economy's going down and to borrow money you don't have and that you have to pay back and give it to people that don't need it. That is a tax increase. And then he turns around and cuts the taxes of the people that at the top that benefit from that. So that means that all the people that didn't benefit from that borrowed money, which 80% of it or 90% of it never comes to the working people because they spend everything they make, got to pay all that back. So he increased taxes by $1.5 trillion since he's been in office.
Oh, yeah, and most of it, in the immediate sense, most of it is in state and federal and state and local taxes that have been increased because there's
they've done
less
that too, Tom.
Yeah.
Besides
and,
the deficit that
yeah,
they created.
Plus, you know, more and more of the dollars that we send to Washington D.C. and our tax dollars are being actually used to pay off people like George Bush and his father, who get so much of their income every year from investments, passive investments, a lot of it in Treasury bills in U.S. government
and Cheney
debt.
Too. Cheney's got supposedly, according to a British newspaper. They don't know for sure, but they think he may have up to $70 million in tax-free bonds in different investments in the governments of the United States.
Right, and you and I are paying the interest on it.
It's not enough that they steal the money.
No.
You know, once they steal the money, then they want to keep looting the taxpayers after they steal it.
That's right.
They are
rigging the game, Armin. You're absolutely right, and well said. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, exposing the con in conservative. Yeah, that's a good one. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Workers at a sugar plant in Minnesota have found themselves locked out with no contact from the company. More than 220 employees of the Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Cooperation in Renville arrived at work last Thursday and found that they could not enter the plant. Many of the 500 farmers that are members of the cooperation also did not find out about the lockout until the workers did.
This week, car giant Ford Motor Company is launching on August 5th its first American-made hybrid SUV called the Ford Escape. Produced by union workers in a Kansas City plant, Escape is being celebrated as a breakthrough in reducing U.S. oil dependence. The UAW, Sierra Club, Apollo Alliance, United Steelworkers, and the Audubon Society are encouraging other auto manufacturers to produce hybrid vehicles. They're kicking off the Green Machines Tour, promoting hybrids and fuel efficiency in an effort to convince state and federal governments to fund new environmentally friendly technologies. Judy Ansell is the director of the Institute for Labor Studies at UMKC.
Well, a hybrid uses much less gas. The new hybrid Escape will achieve 30 to 36 miles per gallon, or more than a 50% improvement over the standard Escape. In terms of cleaner air, in terms of less dependence on foreign imported oil, this is a good thing for the United States and for American consumers.
Demand for the hybrid Escape is expected to be high. There are waiting lists in the U.S. to purchase foreign-produced hybrids like the Toyota Prius or Honda Civic, and U.S. registration of hybrid vehicles jumped 26% last year.
A lawsuit has been filed against photographic giant Kodak alleging racial discrimination. The suit says the company has been paying black employees less than white employees for more than a decade. In addition, it claims that African Americans were promoted less and that the company allowed Caucasian employees to harass them. The suit also alleges that Kodak would retaliate against employees who complained. The class action lawsuit was filed on behalf of 10 black employees, but covers at least 1,000 both past and present. The suit seeks an end to the discrimination and punitive damages. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Although various state legislatures have complained loudly about state contractors sending jobs overseas, 42 of the 50 states do business with companies that...
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, there should be some music there, and there's not, but I'm here, so welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 27 minutes before the hour. And at some point here, I want to talk about what liberal means. I think this is fascinating. Jack Kennedy made an absolutely powerful comment back on September 14, 1960, about what liberal means. And but before we try to revive that term, let's just pick up a few phone calls here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The website, TomHartman.com. You can find the phone number if you just click on the show home page, I believe. And if you want to drop into our chat room, it is just packed full of folks. Great conversation going on. Just click the chat room link there. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Humboldt County, California on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Oh, Tom, thank you so much for being there and for your knowledge of history and for your grasp of reality.
Well, as flawed as it may be, Roberta is... partly right. There's a whole lot of incredible nuance that led to the fall of the Athenian democracy, and I gave the super shorthand version, but I am absolutely and utterly convinced that Socrates played a big role.
There's nothing we can do about the Athenian history, and an awful lot we have to do about our present history, because you know, throughout history there's been malevolent governments that have acted to the detriment of their citizens, but we have a special situation now where they have appointed an Ashcroft to oversee our police role to play in our voting. So what I'm proposing today, I've been thinking about this and listening to you for a long time now, that we've got to come up with a plan short of an armed revolution to find a way that the citizens can survive what is an obvious attempt at going to be a second election fraud against the citizens.
Yeah.
And,
well, you know...
I've been thinking about this and listening to you for a long time now, that we've got to come up with a plan short of an armed revolution to find a way that the citizens can survive what is an obvious attempt at going to be a second election fraud against the citizens.
Yeah. Well, you know, Dave, I got to tell you, probably you heard this, and I'm probably telling you something you already know, but the Democratic Party is, as we speak, training armies of volunteers to show up at the polls, to watch the polls, probably you heard this, and I'm probably telling you something you already know, but the Democratic Party is, as we speak, training armies of volunteers to show up at the polls, to watch the polls, do exit counts, to keep track of things. The National Organization of Women last week voted to request Kofi Annan's of volunteers to show up at the polls, to watch the polls, do exit counts, to keep track of things. The National Organization of Women last week voted to request Kofi Annan send United Nations election monitors. And, of course, immediately Newt Gingrich goes to the Republicans and says, hey, here's a wedge issue we can use. 80% of our poll, in our polls, 80% of people say they're opposed to the UN monitoring our elections. Start talking about that on the talk shows and things. And so,
how do we get a hold of them? And there's one more thing I'd like to suggest on that.
Sure.
And that is that it's going to be just an itsy-bitsy bit illegal, but nothing in comparison to what they're planning. We need to have...
corporate tax cut called the Tea Act of 1773. And I think ever since then there's been a consensus broadly, perhaps outside of the Civil War era, that...
Hi, Tom. I'm sorry I'm backtracking a little bit.
That's fine.
But to get back to now Bush, possibly leaving office with fewer people employed than when it started.
Yes, and, you know, in other words, this attack, this bomb, this whatever, it could be in the form of a mushroom.
Yeah.
What, dear God, who does this, who is this God anyway that Bush relates to? I really like.
Well,
to
he's
know.
He's an angry God, Ruth. I think that's pretty clear.
Me.
Yeah, it is George Bush's theology. Abraham Lincoln had it right, and I was so pleased when John Kerry used that quote in his speech. George Bush, about 3-4 weeks ago when he was talking to the Amish, he said that, you know, God speaks through me.
Right.
And I concluded that he's actually a fan of the United States Postal Service. And that what he meant was that, Maine, the state of Maine, where his dad has a compound in Cunningbunkport, is God's country, because the postal code for Maine is ME. And so the God speaks through me. Right.
Oh,
I'm hoping that that's what he was talking about, because I wouldn't want to think that he's actually psychotic, you know, that he's a megalomaniac. But when Kerry quoted Lincoln, and Lincoln saying, you know, our prayer is not that God is on our side, but that we are on God's side.
Love that. I heard you repeat that yesterday, and I really like that. But, you know, these people are just, I don't know what it's all about. It's just really, it's just kind of scary.
Mostly.
Our soldiers are over there dying. Do they know what they're doing over there? I don't think they do, and if they do, they can't say.
Well, that's another tragedy. The only talk radio that they can hear over there is Rush Limbaugh on Armed Forces Radio. No, I'm serious. It's the only talk radio that's on Armed Forces. The only talk radio that's on Armed Forces Radio is Limbaugh.
That's just not acceptable.
Call your elected officials and tell them that.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. Okay,
oh, I don't
good.
Hesitate. But the other evening when it showed the bombing of the churches, you know what? I just sat here and cried, and I said, "Bush, you are responsible for all this."
Yeah, it's an absolute tragedy.
Sad. I don't know how much more the people in this country that care can take it.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing: translate that concern into action.
And I have.
Yeah. Well,
listen, my husband and I worked these polls here in Santa Fe for 14 years.
That's wonderful.
And my husband died last year.
Did to the American economy?
No. Not to the best of my knowledge. What do you think Y2K did to the American economy?
Well, I think Y2K in the late 90s created more jobs than we care to admit to. And proof being, my sister works for a very large chain, department store chain, where she was director of telecommunications. And just for updating supplies, software, everything to be Y2K compliant, she had probably 50 people in that department, and that's all they did.
Yeah.
As soon as Y2K came and left, their jobs were gone.
Yeah, there's no doubt that there was a small bubble there that it was late 1999. But the economy was still solid in the year 2000. The economy didn't really start to go downhill until March of 2001. And that was a year and a half after Y2K.
But didn't the stock market really start to go down in April of 2000?
You know, I don't have a chart right in front of me, but the economy as a whole, we did not go into an official recession until either March or April of 2001. And, I'll grant you that the Y2K thing, there was a little bit of a bubble there. But I just don't think the real issue here, Rick, is that Bill Clinton, when Bill Clinton, whose name I can't remember, pushed through, and he really aggressively worked on this thing, pushed through NAFTA and GATT, he just kicked open a door that Ronald Reagan had opened maybe 5 or 6 inches to allow, to change the rules of the game of business in the United States, so that the working people of America now have to compete with the other 5.75 billion people on planet Earth, more than half of whom live on less than $2 a day.
Right.
For labor, and Reagan began that with his declaring war on organized labor, firing Patco and all that stuff, the union busting. When Reagan came into office, 25% of the American workforce workforce was unionized, which means 50% of all American workers, more or less, had jobs that were the equivalent of full union benefits. They had jobs where one person working could put in, you know, could raise their family, put their kids through school, pay for their health care, and have retirement left over. When Reagan came in, that was half of America. 25% was unionized. Our peak was 35%, by the way, but in the 1950s, and it started sliding because of the Taft-Hartley bill in 1947. But in any case, Reagan kicked open that door, 25%, and now it's 7 or 8%. And there's just been this, you know, Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and George W. Bush, all four of those guys, in greater or lesser degrees, have perpetuated and increased this slide of income in the middle class of America and an aggregation of wealth at the very top. And that's that. You know, my gripe with Bill Clinton is this whole thing about we're the new Democrats. Well, the new Democrats are sort of like the old Republicans used to be, you know. And
right.
That's the problem. The problem is that the rules of the game have been changed.
Oh, I totally agree. But even where I'm from in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, there is an ADC telecommunications plant or campus that's unbelievable, sitting empty.
Right.
That was started in 97 and completed by 99 because they thought the big boom would continue. And Marconi in Cleveland, they have now sold to Emerson. There's, I think, 1,500 jobs gone there.
But, Rick, the big boom has continued. Right now in Silicon Valley, there are about 160,000 people, you know, employed in the high-tech industry. That's like this. It's considered a huge concentration. In Bangalore, where 15 years ago there wasn't 50 people in the high-tech business, in Bangalore there's 150,000.
Wow.
They're within spitting distance of being larger than Silicon Valley, California. So, I mean, you know, the boom has continued. It's just, you know, because we changed the rules of the game, it's no longer confined to our boundaries, to our borders. It is now, the American workers now have to compete with people who are willing to work for $3 an hour, $2 an hour, $1.50 an hour, and speak English and can do a fairly decent job and can buy enough food. You know, I mean, in India, you can buy enough food to feed a family for $10 a week. You know,
sure. I heard over the weekend, they're even talking now about India having to outsource to China.
Right. Right. Well, this is what happened with Mexico. Right after NAFTA, there were all these maquiladoras, you know, these factories being built along the border in order to make use of cheap Mexican labor. And then when George W. Bush, you know, giving China most favored nation's trade status, dropping the last few barriers we had in terms of tariffs and things, those companies are now, you know, there's all these empty factories now in Mexico because they've gone to China. So it's just crazy. It's crazy.
Well, hopefully we can get some of it back.
Yes, and the way that we will do it is by waking people up. The role the government plays in this is, you know, government doesn't create jobs. The cons love to say government doesn't create jobs, and they're right. Government doesn't create jobs. However, government defines the rules of the game by which entrepreneurs, small business people, and large businesses create jobs. And sure. those rules have been very fluid over the last 228 years. We've had the experience of saying, there's no rules at all. And what did we get? We got the robber barons, and it wiped out the middle class, and we got what we have right now. Or we've had the experience of saying, hey, if you're going to do business, you're going to have to do it in a way that allows for a middle class in America where people, if they're part of the social contract, is that they're going to work a 40-hour week, they're going to put in their time, they're going to work hard, they're going to do that job for 20, 30 years, then the other, your end of the agreement is that they will have health care during that time, they'll be able to put their kids through school, and they'll have a retirement. And that's the deal. And if you can't have that deal, then you can't do business. And that's how it was in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and that's what the conservatives want to do away with, and that's what we need to bring back. So, anyway.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Rick.
Great show, and I'm sure there's other people who want to talk to you. So
okay.
Thanks for taking my call.
I'm very pleased to take your call. Thanks a lot. What do our opponents mean when they apply to us the label liberal? Asked John Kennedy on September 14, 1960. If by liberal they mean, as they want people to believe, someone who is soft on his policies abroad, who is against local government, is unconcerned with the taxpayer's dollar, then we are not that kind of liberal. But if by liberal they mean someone who looks ahead and not behind, someone who welcomes new ideas without rigid reactions, someone who cares about the welfare of the people, their health, their housing, their schools, their jobs, their civil rights, their civil liberties, someone who believes we can break through the stalemate and suspicions that grip us in our policies abroad, if that is what they mean by liberal, then I'm proud, John Kennedy said on September 14, 1960. I'm proud to say I'm a liberal. 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Mega media giant Clear Channel Communications refused to allow an anti-war group to buy space on a billboard in Times Square during the Republican National Convention through Election Day. But public pressure forced Clear Channel to finally accept an ad showing a giant peace dove and a ticker displaying the cost of the war in Iraq in dollars. The 150-foot-long sign will be displayed at Broadway and 42nd Street. WIN correspondent Rebecca Miles reports.
Project Billboard, an anti-war group based in California and interested in encouraging public debate, filed a lawsuit against Clear Channel Communications alleging breach of contract. What is at stake is a billboard advertisement that Project Billboard contracted to run with Clear Channel. The advertisement featured a red, white, blue character of a bomb with the caption, "Democracy is better taught by example, not by war." Clear Channel rejected the first advertisement, saying they were not going to run bomb copy in New York City. Project Billboard then replaced the bomb image with a red and white blue dove, accompanied by the same words, but this was also rejected. They claim that Clear Channel had suggested that the billboard be an image of a little girl waving a flag. Clear Channel Communications is one of the nation's largest media companies with close ties to national Republicans. I asked Deborah Rappaport, founder of the Project Billboard, whether she thought the debate had begun, as Clear Channel Communications' rejection of the billboard had started a flurry of debate in television and newspaper stories.
This was never our intent to get into any sort of a fight like this. We're not unhappy that our message is getting out, but we would be many, many, many times happier if it were getting out in the mode that we had chosen.
We put a call into Clear Channel Communications for comment, but it by news broadcast had no response. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Love me two times, baby. Love me twice today.
And welcome back. Music is working again. Good to know. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The second fastest rate in the history of the United States, actually the third fastest, the second in modern history, of job loss has been during George W. Bush's administration. A layoff rate of 8.7% of all adult job holders. Your odds are roughly 1 in 10 of having lost a job during George Bush's administration. That's almost equal to the 9% rate from 81-83, the last time an American president tried to mess with the economy with huge tax cuts, Ronald Reagan. And the time before that was Herbert Hoover and his tax cuts in 1929-1930. Helen in West Virginia is on the line. Hey, Helen, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to remind you, maybe, I haven't heard the first of your show, but I was wondering... Today is the day that the law goes in effect for no overtime pay.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you for the reminder.
It's disheartening. Yeah. And speaking of heartening, it's Tom Harkin fought very hard for that amendment to extend it, and it was killed. So, people, beware. We're not going to get any overtime pay.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you, Tom. I know you're running out of time.
Yeah, no, that's fine, Helen. Thank you.
Maybe we can talk about this or something tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll go check that out because I was unaware of that little anniversary, and it's certainly one that is part of the ongoing tragedy of the Bush administration, well, of the conservative in general war on labor, on the American
worker. Well, they will be having people work... 40-50 hours, but they won't get any overtime pay.
Yeah.
This is outrageous and un-American.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome. Thank you, Helen, for the call. Great to hear from you. And see, the conservative response to that would be, Helen, you're a socialist. That's what they would be saying. You know, government should be telling private industry how they can treat their workers. No. It's a free enterprise. No. They forget. As Franklin Roosevelt said, they seek to hide behind the flag and the Constitution, and in their blindness they forget what the flag and the Constitution stand for. Now, as always, they stand against rule by the mob or the overprivileged alike. There you go. Now, if I'm going to do my Roosevelt quotes, I need to remember them before I start talking about it. But you get the point. You get the point. Thank you for being with us today. Thanks to Louise for producing our show. Thanks to Ira for engineering it. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us out on the web. Thanks to our sponsors for making it possible. To the folks in our chat room for showing up. Great discussion today. Thanks to Jay for writing and recording, producing our theme music. And thanks to you for listening. The most important part of the program. Now get out there and get politically active. See you tomorrow. Same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope.